This is Sports Saturday with Brad Porter on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
This is an underrated soundtrack. The American Pie soundtrack. How old was that movie? It's got to be 15 years
1999,
old.
1999, I think.
1999, you got to be
kidding
me.
First one came out, I believe.
Oh, my God.
I'm not mistaken.
Great soundtrack.
Yep. Good. A lot of good stuff.
Back on Sports Saturday here on Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City and across the Midwest, cranking out 50,000 watts. Hope your Saturday is off to a good start. If you're running around, hope you have fun, whether you're going to kids' games, grocery shopping, whatever you got to get done on a Saturday. We appreciate you hanging out with us for a little bit before the heat really rolls in this afternoon. We've had a good show so far. By the way, my name is Brad Porter. Chris Bohlig is running the show. We've had a good show so far. Back in hour number one, we had Kevin McGuire from NBCSports.com join us talking college football, and he had a lot of good stuff. And we talked about the guy who used to be the head coach at the independent school who was featured in Last Chance U on Netflix.
Jason Brown.
Yeah, the guy who got fired.
Didn't you say he played with the Chiefs or was on their practice squad?
I think he did lie about that. Yeah, absolutely. He got fired, and now he's been charged with 8 felonies, including identity theft and blackmail. Identity theft? He went after 2 reporters is what he did.
Yeah. He said he has a beach house in California, so he continued. If you watched the show,
bigger and better.
Well, he would always be like, my beach house and chilling in my hot tub and I have a Cadillac, like 3 Cadillacs or something like that. So
maybe he comes from a wealthy family.
He's from Compton, so that doesn't. It didn't sound like he made it sound like he didn't really come from like a great background.
Maybe he won a lottery somewhere that we don't know about. Maybe he was getting funneled money from other
college
programs.
I don't know.
That was strange, though. So, Kevin McGuire from NBCSports.com, the first time we've had him on. Good stuff. If you missed it or you'd like to listen, you can get the podcast at 810WHB.com. In hour number two, we spoke with Nick Garcia, former Kansas City Wizards and Sporting KC defender. We talked about Sporting's game tonight against Real Salt Lake, which you can hear live at 9 p.m. right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB with the postgame show, The Final Whistle with Dave Borchardt at 11. We talked a little Sporting. We talked the USA women in the World Cup, moving on after beating France and facing England on Tuesday, July the 2nd, 2 days before the American Independence Day. And we talked about the U.S. men in the Gold Cup. Great showing for the fans of Kansas City at the game at Children's Mercy Park. Great showing down at Power and Light yesterday to watch the Women's World Cup. By the way, did you hear that last ESPN update, the national update, that 2-minute thing at the top of the hour?
Yeah, I was kind of paying attention.
In all 5 games the U.S. women have played in this World Cup,
they've scored insanely fast.
They've scored within the first 12 minutes.
Yeah.
Yesterday against France, it was 5 minutes in. That's unbelievable. So if you want a preview on Sporting and a little Women's World Cup and a little Men's Gold Cup, you can also find that on the podcast at 810WHB.com. Our next guest is Scott Phillips from NBCSports.com, covers the NBA and college basketball. And we had recorded this interview yesterday with the intention of using it today because Scott's schedule, that's just the way it worked out. I was going to do a couple of hours on Between the Lines. Things changed, and we did the whole 4 hours. So we played Scott Phillips yesterday, and you're going to hear it again today. Because like I said, the audiences, I'm sure, are not 100% the same. Friday from 2 to 6, as opposed to Saturday morning from 9 to noon. So Scott Phillips, good conversation about college basketball and the NBA. Here is what we had to talk about. We've been fortunate. It is not crack 90 before this week. But over in Chicago, they've had a pretty mild spring as well. And that's where we find Scott Phillips from NBCSports.com. Scott, pretty good spring and early summer there in Chi-Town.
Yeah, it's been pretty horrible. The fact that we're even cracking the 80s this week has been great for us. We've not been able to use swimming pools. We've had a lot of rainouts, whether it be the Cubs and Sox or other local activities. And it finally feels like summer the last week of June.
As long as it doesn't get to 100, I'm fine. If it's a mild spring and summer, that's great. Hey, I appreciate you joining us today, talking a little NBA, talking a little college basketball. I want to kind of hit the NBA draft first. No surprise that Zion Williamson went one overall to New Orleans. But I was really interested in following Ja Morant. I think the consensus was going in he was going to be number two. But, Scott, I mean, go back to a year ago. Murray State's not on national television ever. I honestly didn't know a lot about him and started watching him as it got closer to the NCAA tournament. And then he just exploded. Did the NBA insiders, did the NBA scouts have a beat on this guy early on, or was this kind of a surprise to other people as well?
I think there was definitely some NBA people who had a pulse on what Ja Morant was capable of. I mean, obviously he wasn't in the national spotlight. As you kind of alluded to, Brad, he wasn't on television with Murray State. The Ohio Valley Conference just isn't on television very often for a mass audience to see, but you know, he was starting to climb into some mock drafts. I think people understood the assist totals that he was racking up, the points that he was bringing with it, his ability to create off the bounce. And now that he had the spotlight on him for his sophomore season, for him to elevate his play and to average a double-double, to lead Murray State into the round of 32, I think says it all, because you know, he started to get a little bit of pressure on him at this point last offseason and really developed into that pressure cooker and developed into the player that he is right now.
And going into this draft, obviously here in the Midwest, we look at you know, Kansas and Missouri and K-State kids. And I think, I don't know if anybody was surprised that Kansas did not have anybody drafted. And that was the first time in a long time. But they had, you know, several guys like Devon Dotson and Quentin Grimes go through the tryouts and get the reports back. And they said they were not ready yet. You know, Dawson wasn't drafted. Was this a surprise to anybody that Kansas was kind of left on the outside looking in during the draft?
Not particularly, because if you look at Dedrick Lawson and his draft profile, he had the worst testing of any athlete in the combine a couple years back before he transferred into campus. So there are already some red flags about Lawson and what he might be able to bring to the table in terms of NBA upside. And, you know, with guys like Azubuike and Dotson coming back, Grimes coming back and opting to transfer, there just weren't a lot of guys who were really in the mix for draft capabilities for Kansas this year. And, you know, a lot of their best players were on the younger side this year, or they're more built for the college game like an Azubuike is. So we might even see that go into next year's Kansas, obviously not bringing in the one-and-dones that they're used to and building more of a kind of typical 3 to 4 year program these last two or three recruiting cycles.
Another player of local interest that was kind of a surprise in the draft is Bol Bol. Went to Oregon, but he started out locally here in Kansas City at Bishop Miege High School. And he was projected, you know, by a lot of the whatever credence you want to give to the mock drafts, he could have gone top 10, top 15. And I heard rumblings going into the draft that the NBA was kind of questioning his dedication and to the sport and staying healthy. He'd had question marks throughout his entire high school career. Was it a surprise to you that he slipped all the way down to 44?
Yeah, to 44, absolutely. I think there are a lot of red flags with Bol in terms of his overall health. And as you kind of mentioned, some of the NBA teams were maybe scared by his lack of work effort in some cases. But, you know, this is a guy who at 7'2" with a 40% three-point shooting range is not something you can teach every day. And for him to drop all the way to number 44 at Denver in a league that is craving shot blockers, is craving floor spacing, and he happens to bring both of those things to the table, obviously a lot of teams are really skittish to have him on their roster and to have him be a part of their culture. So we're going to have to see what Bol Bol's injury looks like. Obviously, he hasn't seen the floor healthy since about the ninth or eighth game in the Oregon season. And I'm anxious to see if he's got a little bit of a chip on his shoulder as well, because he went from being obviously very well-known, a former five-star prospect in McDonald's All-American and the son of an NBA player, to now being embarrassed on draft night and dropping all the way to the second round when he could have been in the top 10.
We're speaking with Scott Phillips, NBCSports.com. You can follow him on Twitter, @PhillipsHoops. Scott, another one, Jontay Porter. You know, last year he went through the draft process, got evaluated, came back to Mizzou, and got hurt right out of the chute. But as we've seen in the NBA in recent years, teams are more willing to draft a player despite injuries. And even if it's going to take a whole year, they are willing to do that. What are the reports you heard about Jontay Porter and his skill level and his ability to rehab and become a productive player, even with some time off?
It's going to be fascinating to see how he recovers from the second ACL tear, because he was already a little bit slow and wasn't able to get easily off the ground before the ACL injuries. Now he's had two of them, and you just really wonder what he's capable of doing around the basket. Now, the best thing about Jontay Porter is his skill level. He's obviously able to space the floor from well beyond three-point range for his size. He rebounds effectively in his area, but I just don't know, given the way the NBA is with athleticism and length around the basket, how Porter's going to be able to handle that. And, you know, again, overcoming that injury, making sure that he's rehabbing properly, not pushing himself too early this time and injuring himself, again, is going to be a key thing. But as long as he's hitting shots at a high clip, he's going to have an opportunity to play. There's been a number of teams in this draft in particular, when we look at guys like Dylan Windler sneaking into the first round and Cam Johnson going number 11 high as well, that shooting is still at a premium. So if a guy can hit perimeter shots at the NBA level, they're going to be coveted, and that's what Jontay Porter ultimately has to do once he gets healthy.
We are speaking with Scott Phillips, NBCSports.com, covers the NBA and college basketball. Dropping back into college now, Quentin Grimes went through the evaluation process with the NBA, came back that maybe he wasn't ready yet or he'd be drafted lower than what he thought. And I was caught off guard a little bit when it was announced that he was going to transfer. He's decided to go to Houston, went through the transfer portal. I don't know when he'll be cleared or if he'll be cleared the first year. But that seems like an oddity in today's game that someone who is at a program like Kansas at such a high level would opt out and transfer and go to Houston. Look, I like Houston. I covered him at the NCAA tournament here in Kansas City. I've covered Kelvin Sampson for years. I think he's a great coach. But that seemed like a little bit of an odd move after just 1 year.
Well, I think Quentin Grimes saw the writing on the wall, and that's Devin Dotson was going to be back, and he was going to have the ball in his hands. And when in talking with Quentin Grimes directly at the NBA Combine, he said to me how he wanted to have an opportunity to showcase himself more on the ball, to show teams what he was really capable of. At one point, he said that he was only able to show 50% of what he was capable of at Kansas. So I think the writing was on the wall with those comments back at the Combine right there. And once Dotson returned to school as well, I think Grimes realized that if he wanted to play point guard, which is likely his NBA position if he's going to succeed, that he had to go elsewhere. He's going to ultimately waste the season playing next to Dotson in his mind if he stayed at Kansas this year. So now he gets an opportunity to maybe take over at Houston. And Kelvin Sampson's done a tremendous job with lead guard these last couple of years. You look at guys like Rob Gray, who have been NCAA tournament darlings, and what they've been able to accomplish. So if Grimes gets this year off, kind of learns to refocus his game and becomes a valuable point guard for Houston, then it's the right move for him. But obviously, he clearly didn't want to play with Dotson at Kansas this season and felt as though he needed the ball in his hands to succeed.
And sometimes, Scott, it just doesn't work out. We saw the good side of it, how it can work out with Frank Mason before and Devontae Graham. They had to figure out how to play together, and they were able to do it. But sometimes it just doesn't work out.
No, definitely not. And I think the thing that's differing about these two situations as well is that Devontae Graham and Frank Mason were both three-star, kind of under-the-radar type
yes.
of recruits. And
mm-hmm.
Quentin Grimes was a guy who was a five-star McDonald's All-American. He'd been basically given a lot of promises in recruiting through various programs, not saying that Bill Self promised him anything that he didn't deliver on, but he says and hears a lot of things that a lot of the guys like Frank Mason's and Devontae Graham's of the world don't hear in recruiting. So when two top 50 guys like Devon Dotson and Quentin Grimes both come into the same spot, they both want the ball in their hands, and they both then promise that they're going to get the ball, then sometimes things don't necessarily deliver when they don't go as expected. And ultimately, we saw Grimes felt as though he needed to find a different situation for himself.
We're going to see some changes in college basketball this year, and one of those is UConn going back to the Big East. And look, Scott, we're speaking with Scott Phillips, NBCSports.com. I've never been a big fan of all these huge changes in the landscape of individual conferences, but I think it's probably a better fit for them. It adds name value. And here locally, UMKC a few years ago decided to leave the Summit League, go to the WAC, probably doubled their travel budgets, and now they're going back to the Summit League. So maybe this will be a different kind of a trend where schools will look around and think, you know, it wasn't as good as we thought it was going to be, and we kind of like to go back to our comfort zone a little bit.
Yeah, I applaud UConn and the Big East for figuring this out. This is a natural move for both parties. It enhances both of them tremendously. And again, kudos to UConn's athletics department and administration for recognizing that basketball is their calling card sport, and they made a decision that was based on basketball instead of football, which is something we really haven't seen over these last 10 to 15 years of really big business college athletics. But you know, UConn's football program is struggling. They've now been kicked out of the AAC. It's very clear, given how successful that their men's basketball program and women's basketball programs have been, that they are a basketball school, and that's what the Big East is known for. It's going to create a lot of those natural rivalries that we're used to seeing with the Georgetowns and the Villanovas. UConn's going to be able to play back in Madison Square Garden for the Big East tournament, which is a big draw for those local fans and really a huge, huge thing for the Big East to try to get those more fans in the building. And again, I just think the American wasn't a great fit for them geographically for recruiting either. It's more of a natural recruiting thing to have those guys go to the Big East and go to the Northeast kids and say, hey, we're going to play in Madison Square Garden. So I think it's a home run for both UConn and the Big East, and the American's going to be able to move on just fine as well.
Yeah, and here locally, I was disappointed in not a breakup, but of teams leaving the Missouri Valley, which was such a fantastic conference for so long. And I remember years ago, they got four teams in the NCAA tournament, and Billy Packer thought it was a travesty that Missouri Valley would get four teams in. And then here in the last couple of years, they've had teams leave here and there. And it's just, it's not right. I mean, it was just such a good conference with those schools.
Yeah, I mean, the Valley's just been different in terms of the money being spent. Creighton's filling a pro-sized arena every single night. Obviously, you have Wichita State, who ascended into a Final Four brothers with backing of the Koch brothers as prominent donors. So, you know, you have two big-money programs in the Missouri Valley that made the move to the high-major ranks, and they both had the spending to do so. So I think that the Missouri Valley's set with a great lineup of schools right now. I don't foresee any of those schools trying to leave the league anytime soon. And it's tough to lose great schools like that, but ultimately it's the way that the dollar is going to work in college sports now.
We're speaking with Scott Phillips, NBCSports.com. You can follow him on Twitter, at Phillips Sports, here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Another story that kind of popped up this week, Scott, is the story of Cade Cunningham being recruited by Oklahoma State, and they've hired his dad to be on the staff. And look, we've seen this going back to Danny Manning at the University of Kansas. We've seen it in a number of different places. To me, it just is what it is. It just happens in college basketball. I don't really understand why it's still a big deal, unless you just don't like Oklahoma State. This happens. If your dad is a coach and they're trying to recruit you, they're going to hire the dad or the uncle or the brother or whatever it is, but this has become an issue this week.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I don't blame Oklahoma State at all. To be able to get Kanan Cunningham, Cade's brother, and to kind of have that inside track on his recruitment is huge for them because, you know, things have kind of been down the last couple of years for Oklahoma State basketball. They were mired in that FBI investigation, and they had a new head coach after Brad Underwood left for Illinois after one season. So to be in the mix for who is potentially the number one player in this class, because Cade Cunningham has had a monster spring and is now playing for the U19 USA team, you have to make that sort of move. And Kanan Cunningham is on the younger side for assistant coaching. He just got out of playing college basketball himself at SMU a few years back, but you know, he's an up-and-coming guy. He worked on Mike Dunleavy's staff at Tulane last year, and Cade is really close with him. Cade has mentioned to me how working with his brother directly has helped elevate his game into what it is right now, and the two are very close in terms of what they're doing on the basketball court. So not only is it a brotherly relationship, but the two seem to have a special bond over basketball, and that sort of thing could ultimately matter and sway Cunningham's decision in the direction of Cowboys.
And I apologize. I said dad, and I meant his brother, but you know, we've had it happen so many times. I always think of the dad first in college basketball. Speaking with Scott Phillips, NBCSports.com, we've seen the preseason polls come out, and then we've seen things change because of the transfers and the NBA draft. Do you have a top five in your head right now that you think looks pretty good?
I'm still wrestling with some things, Brad, but ultimately I like the core group of Michigan State, Kentucky, Duke, Kansas, and Villanova. I think that given the history of those teams, the coaches involved, a lot of the projected guys returning in the starting lineup, there's a lot of experience at play there, and I know that that's a lot of blue blood champions classic type of programs, but we're really not seeing a lot of newcomers rise through the ranks. I mean, even the second tier group of teams outside of the top five, you know, you're talking about Louisville and Maryland, a national championship team like Virginia, Texas Tech's in the mix. It's just fascinating to see what some of these teams are going to be capable of this year, given the returnees. And I'm really looking at Michigan State as my number one team right now. I think Cassius Winston's the preseason player of the year. He was outstanding in the NCAA tournament last season, and to have him back with a core group that is familiar with him is huge for the Spartans. They might be the team that finally breaks that Big Ten title drought.
All right, Scott, final thing for you. Being a Chicago guy, I've been to Chicago many times. Used to travel with the Royals, and I love going there. I've been there with the family to do all the museums and everything like that. So give me your top pizza place. When I was there, we tried a couple of different places, and I'll just tell you, Gino's East was kind of at the top of my list, but I'll take someone who lives there. I'll take your advice.
When it comes to deep dish pizza, I always go with Lou Malnati's. And
okay.
The combination of the butter crust, the ingredients, the freshness, and also the other things available on the menu. They're more than just a pizza place. They have great salads, they have great wings, great hospitality, a good bar, a fun atmosphere. But to me, Lou Malnati's is over Giordano's and Gino's East in terms of deep dish pizza. I think they have the total package. I think they have other great things on the menu. And to me, the butter crust is kind of the separator there for me.
Well, I will take your word for it. Maybe I was leaning towards Gino's East because my kids were much smaller when we went there, and you could write your name on the table and the walls, and it distracted them
Definitely.
For a little bit. And when we went to Giordano's, I think we had to wait an hour and a half to get a table. So, good
stuff. Yeah, expect to wait, that's for sure. But, to me, Lou Malnati's and Gino's East are 1-2, and Lou's for me just takes the cake. I think it's tremendous.
I'll write that down, Lou Malnati's. Hey, Scott, I appreciate it. Good stuff on the NBA and college basketball, as always. NBCSports.com. Follow on Twitter, @PhillipsHoops. Scott, I appreciate your time. Thank you so much, and have a great weekend.
Yeah, thank you. You too. Thanks for having me on.
All right, that was our conversation with Scott Phillips from NBCSports.com, talking a little NBA, talking a little college basketball, and talking a little pizza.
I disagree with – I do – okay, so Lou Malnati's, I have family that lives in Chicago. My mom is from there, and all four of my aunts live up there. My grandma does too. I would have to give – so we'd always go to Lou Malnati's because that's what was closest to everyone's house,
right?
Houses and whatnot. But I will have to say Giordano's takes the cake, in my opinion. I'm a Giordano's guy.
The night we went there, like I said, I think we waited an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours.
Yeah, I went there. Last time I went, it was at a really good time.
Yeah.
I went to the one by Navy Pier.
Okay, yeah.
And Navy Pier, so that was a good time.
Yep. And at Giordano's, the wait was so long that they would actually come and take your order before, you know, probably 10 minutes after you got there. Because
it takes a long time to cook the pizza.
Yes.
It's like a 45-minute process.
And so you were not getting seated until the pizza was ready or there was a spot opening up.
Are you a New York slice or deep dish guy?
I'm more New York slice.
Okay.
So, I hate ranking Kansas City pizzas because I like so many different kinds. This is not in any order. So if you own a pizza place in Kansas City, I'm not ranking you lower or higher than somebody else. I like Minsky's. I like Waldo Pizza. I can walk to Waldo Pizza. I like Pizza 51. I like the Bronx. It's all good in my book. What's
Original Pizza?
Well, there's not one close to me.
But that was
so
just,
I haven't had it in a while.
Jed Marshall just said OP.
Okay.
So that's his spot.
That's his go-to?
Yeah, I like the Bronx, of course.
Yeah.
Papakino's, as you said, is also very...
I haven't had Papakino's.
You haven't had Papakino's?
No. I don't think there's one close to where I live.
Papakino's is pretty good.
Look.
But...
We were at Spin last night.
Oh, huh? Nice. But there's always a debate between Chicago and New York slice. I mean, it kind of just depends on what... Chicago is very heavy. It's a very hefty slice.
Yes,
you can
is.
Only eat about two.
Yeah.
New York slice, you can eat.
You can throw a few of those
down. You can put three or four back and not feel terrible.
I wish I could remember when I was in New York the last time where we went for pizza, but it was a total play. You walk in and you better know the language. You say a coke and a slice. You don't, there's not much else to say. There's no... Not a lot of debate unless you want something on it. Just a Coke and a slice. You get your, and the slice of pizza is about as big as your face. Pizza 51 is a huge pizza, a huge slice.
Yeah, they're big slices.
Huge slice. I have some friends who own that place, so I'm loyal and partial to them as well. That's always a good one. Now I want to go get pizza again. Good gravy. Yeah, I'm a New York slice. I mean, look at me. I'm not very big. I'm a New York slice guy.
I got you. You sit around.
I do like it. De Bronx, they have those Zapp's potato chips, which I
Zapp's
really
potato
like.
Chips.
The kettle cooked.
Give me some jalapeno.
Yeah, style. You like the jalapeno?
I love spicy stuff. Anything spicy, I'm all about.
Yeah,
so.
Good stuff. I might have to go to Chicago and find something. All right, on that note, I'll be making lunch plans to maybe go get some more pizza today at some point. We'll take a quick timeout, and then we'll have our final half hour for the show. You are listening to Sports Saturday. My name is Brad Porter. Chris Bohlig is running the show. You're on Sports Radio 810 WHB. You can play Modest Mouse anytime. By the way, someone had told me earlier this week they're coming to town.
That was me yesterday.
Oh, that was you yesterday? Okay.
See, I was telling you and Les.
Well, let's just say yesterday was a little...
That was crazy.
We had some distractions yesterday.
Yeah. They're coming in with Black Keys.
Black Keys. That'd
Hopefully
be a good show.
Hopefully I can make it out there. I think it's September 23rd.
Is it at Sprint Center?
It's at Sprint Center,
okay.
Yes. Big, big show. I haven't been to Sprint Center since... I went to Sprint Center to see... I asked for my birthday tickets to Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Yeah.
When they were last at Sprint Center. And
that'd be a great show.
It was like summer 2016, maybe?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think it was after my sophomore year of college.
That's a really good... I wonder how much they tour anymore.
I mean, they don't tour much. I mean,
no.
They're
old men now. I mean, they're not Rolling
Stones
old.
They toured for their album.
Yeah.
Their new album that they put out.
I'm trying to think of the last show I saw at...
When's the last concert you went to, Brad?
Well, I've been to a few. I've been to Kenny Chesney at Arrowhead a couple of times. Really good show. Even if you're not into country music, it's a party is what it is. It's a beach party. He's the Jimmy Buffett of country music. It's a beach party.
I heard there's a lot of people going down with being heavily intoxicated at those events.
Yes.
And there are some ambulances that have to go up the
Well,
roundabout
it seems
thing.
Like whenever the
I don't
the,
know what those are called.
The two times we've seen Kenny Chesney, it seems like it's been the hottest day of the year. And he usually has like two opening acts. And so if you're out there before the show,
people tailgate. I remember in high school people would always go out early
I've seen Kid Rock at Sprint Center.
Ooh, Kid Rock.
Yeah, he actually puts on a really good show. I thought it was a New Year's Eve party thing, and
yeah.
we got invited. Some friends of ours have a corporate suite, you know.
Yeah.
And so we got invited. I was like, I wonder how this is going to go, because you know some of his songs are about drinking massive amounts of alcohol. I was like, wow, he's going to be hammered. This show is going to be terrible. It was really good.
Nice.
His musicians are really good.
Sure,
really
top. Sure they are.
Yeah. I've seen Hall & Oates at Sprint Center.
All right.
Great show. And all of their musicians are professionals. They're all like the same age, and they've been doing it a long time.
Doing it together. I got that camaraderie.
Saw the Police at Sprint Center. Fantastic.
Seen them all. Seen it all at Sprint Center.
Well, the Police were going on, this is our last tour kind of thing, and they had put out a list of dates, and Kansas City was not on the list, but they were going to St. Louis. So we had some friends of ours. We all went over to St. Louis to watch the show, and that was right at the beginning of the tour, and they were not on the same page yet. That was not a good show. They seemed to be out of sync, losing their place at times. One, you know, Sting would get out of sync with the guitar player. And by the time they came back to Kansas City, they had it ironed out. It was fantastic. And they played every song you wanted to hear. There was no, well, we're going to play a special cut off this new album, or we're going to play some Sting solo stuff. No, they played the Police, and they played every one of them. Saw Guns N' Roses at Arrowhead a couple of years ago. It's pretty good. I described that concert as a business trip, because Axl Rose and the other guys in the band don't get along. They do not like each other. And so Slash would stay on one side of the stage, the bass player would stay on the opposite side of the stage, Axl Rose was in the middle, and they did not interact at all. They were here to collect a check and play every song you wanted to hear. And it was good. It was a good show. I liked it. On another note, happy Canada Day to anybody who's listening, who's maybe come here from Canada. There's somebody I follow on Twitter who lives in Kansas City, is from Canada, and plays a lot of hockey, and tweeted out Canada Day today. Didn't know about that. Fireworks. I've heard Soren Petro bring this up to all of his guests this week, with the 4th of July coming up next week. I already have people in my neighborhood shooting off fireworks.
Already?
Already. It's not on my street, but within a few blocks where you can hear it.
Nice.
And so I was going to make a joke, and somebody else had put it on Twitter or Facebook and beat me to the punch. When I go for a walk at night, I kind of think in my head, okay, let's play a game show here. Fireworks or gunshots? If you're not sure, that's not a good place to be.
Fireworks.
So
what's the, because I'm on the Kansas side, so
right.
they're illegal all year right. round. But Missouri, is it just a period that it opens up for that they're legal, or is it all year
round? I'm not sure. There has to be a bottle rocket restriction, I believe. They land on houses.
On the roofs and
yeah,
stuff. And give
a
wood roof. That is not good.
Yeah. I'm not sure what the restrictions are. Honestly, I heard Sir Petro asking all of his guests this week, when's the last time you shot off fireworks? I don't know. It's been that long. When I was a kid, definitely. All the time. But
I remember how jacked I used to get to
go
to get some fireworks on 4th of July.
Yep.
Oh yeah,
but maybe when I got to college, I would go to the big displays. And one of the neighborhoods I lived in growing up was Weatherby Lake, and they would always do a big display over the lake. So you'd go down there and watch all that, and it was fun. And maybe I got away from it because my oldest son, he's a teenager now, but when he was really little, like 3 or 4, we were going to go to the display at Shawnee Mission Park. They always put on a huge fireworks show. And they specifically told, I think there were signs, or they told people when you come into the park, do not shoot off your own fireworks. There's too many people here. There's too many cars. Just enjoy our fireworks display. Well, some asshat behind us decided to set off, I don't know if it was an M80 or not, but my son, who was, like I said, was 3 or 4 at the time, went absolutely bananas. He was scared to death.
Petrified. When you don't know something's coming that loud, too, if it's an M80,
oh God.
That is loud.
And so I turned around and I was looking for the people who shot it off, and there was a group of people laughing, and I was like, that's awesome. So we had to go sit in the car, and then he was so upset we had to leave. And from then on, he's been sensitive.
Does he hate fireworks, though?
Well, now, I don't know if that's what caused it or if it would have happened anyway, but
he doesn't shoot off fireworks.
No,
I'm
God,
assuming.
No.
So that scarred him for life.
No, I tried to take him to, see, my younger son likes NASCAR a little bit, and so we were going out to watch the practice session at Kansas Speedway because it was free, and I took both of them with me, and they both had protective headphones on, and as soon as those cars fired up, my oldest again just, we're leaving. I'm not doing this. My youngest can sit through a whole
how
race.
How old was your oldest at that time, the NASCAR race?
Probably 6 or 7.
Okay.
But my youngest, I've taken him to 2 or 3 races at Kansas Speedway. He loves it. But yeah, loud noises. It just, I think it was that one incident, and then just never. And I honestly, I don't really look at fireworks or go to fireworks displays anymore. Just don't.
I think I just got, in terms of shooting fireworks off, I just got very lazy about it. It's like, I'll let someone else, I'll watch from afar.
For me, it became more enjoyable to watch.
I'd rather see a cool display than,
Royals do one. Those are spectacular.
But still, it was, there were some times though with firecrackers and lit fuses and they would stop and then you'd go up and try to light it again and
not
eardrum
good.
Just ringing because
not
it
good.
Just explodes right away.
So when, I'll go back to the Sir Petro question, when's the last time you shot off fireworks? Do you remember?
We have some in our garage from probably 4 years ago.
Okay.
Off a few bottle rockets,
okay.
But nothing like crazy.
I mean, for me, it's got to be more than 10 years. Maybe 15 years. Just didn't care for it anymore.
We'd always toe the line because we'd get some big stuff. And and there would always be people or police patrolling because they would see how big all of the fireworks.
Well, we used to go to, when my brother and I were kids, we would go to 2 places. One, they had a display at the Coach Light Skate Center in Riverside because we grew up north of the river. And every time we'd show up, we'd look at the different, whatever it is, what's loud, that kind of thing. And one time the guy goes, you guys want something really loud? And we're like, yeah, sure. Not M80s loud, but something else loud. And he's like, come over behind the tent. And he had to, I think he opened up the trunk of his car and he had this stuff called flashing thunder. It was like a Roman candle, but 20 times as loud. I mean, when it went off, your neighborhood knew. your neighborhood knew what was going on. It was that loud. Riverside Skate Center. I haven't thought about that in a while.
I just saw this on Twitter. Have you been an interview from the Big Three? Have you been watching any of the Big Three?
I have not yet.
On the
CBS
Sports Network, I believe.
I was on vacation last week out in Colorado, and I don't even know if they had that channel where we were staying.
Yeah.
So I haven't gotten a chance
to
check
three.
It.
The Big Three. Yeah, it looks... There's some throwbacks.
Guys who are playing?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. I think Gilbert Arenas might be in the Big Three.
Really?
Maybe I'm wrong about that.
Agent,
I don't know.
Agent Zero?
I thought I saw highlights of him in the Big Three, but I could be wrong about that.
Roster. Thankfully, they're doing it that way with a Big Three as opposed to 5-on-5 because you don't need that many old dudes out there. So it's more like it looks like a pickup game or a playground game a little bit.
Yeah, it's just half court 3-on-3. They have a 4-point shot, like a 4-point line, I think. Or spots. It's either spots or just like a 3-point line, but extended.
Right.
Where if you hit it from that spot or behind that line, then it's it counts as 4 points.
Is this the league that Ice Cube was involved
with? Yeah, Ice Cube runs it.
Okay. I wonder if they're making any money.
I think it might have come to Kansas City at one point.
Hmm.
Because it travels. It travels around the country.
I mean, the guys playing, are the guys who need the money, or they're just doing this for fun, or?
I think the champion at the end of it gets a prize
bonus,
or something. Of that nature. I don't know. But I think it's pretty interesting.
All right. Good stuff. All right. On that note, we will take a timeout, and then we'll have one final segment for our Saturday show. And then don't forget, we're back here on Sunday from 9 to 11 with Sports Sunday, and then 11 to 12 with Baseball Tonight. So quick timeout. We'll kind of recap a couple of things, and then we'll get on with our day. You're listening to Sports Saturday. My name is Brad Porter. Chris Bohlig is running the show. You're on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Yeah, this one right here goes out to all the babies, mamas.
I'm going old school for this one. I like it.
Yes, sir. Little outcast.
Welcome back to Sports Saturday, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City. On what is going to be another boiling hot day. It's going to be boiling hot the rest of the week. You might as well. There's no use complaining about it. Nothing you can do about it.
Ready to get sweaty out there.
Yeah, ready to get hot.
Get muggy.
Get hot. He's talking about coming in hot this
pit
week.
Pit out. Just pit out.
Like Bruce Pearl coaching basketball game.
Yeah, Gary Patterson, too, from my alma mater. He is a massive sweater.
Yes.
Towels all the time. He changes shirts a lot at halftime, and it's also very hot in those September games early in the season down at TCU. Of course, if you're playing an 11 o'clock game, sometimes it will be close to 100 degrees, and it is pretty miserable.
Wow.
It's like, those early September games, you should maybe put those around 7 o'clock for the most part.
Especially in Texas.
Yes.
Exactly. Back on the show here for our final segment, my name is Brad Porter. Chris Bohlig is running the show. You can follow me on Twitter at Brad K. Porter. That's at Brad K. Porter. You can follow Chris at Chris_Bohlig. Two L's and one G? Two L's and one G?
Okay. Two L's and one G.
Two L's and one G. That's got to be a song somewhere. Two L's and one G. So,
yeah, there you go. Write it, Brad. Write it.
I'm pretty sure that's not going to happen.
Make some money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let me run down a couple of things here, Chiefs related.
How about that Chris Jones video of him working out with the Bane mask on? Looking,
that was a little scary too. I mean, he's a big man with that mask on. It just
the oxygen depletes the oxygen.
Yeah,
high altitude training, and he's getting after it.
Yeah,
so hopefully he'll be back for training camp.
Hopefully we'll see that in St. Joe.
On
the first day. Hopefully they get that worked out. Working on stuff. We talked about this earlier in the show. In case you missed it in the first hour, the fantasy football rankings are starting to come out. ESPN.com has a big list out today. I believe they have 4 or 5 different writers, each with their own fantasy football rankings. They got the PPR, the non-PPR, they got all that stuff. So I was looking at the PPR from Matthew Berry at ESPN.com and their rankings. And if you're a Kansas City Chiefs fan, you play fantasy football, you'll be pretty happy with it, but it's also going to depend on where you get to draft in your league. Quarterback rankings, according to Matthew Berry, ESPN.com. Number one, Patrick Mahomes. Not a surprise at all. Number two, Deshaun Watson. Maybe a little bit of a surprise, as high as two.
I mean,
but
rushing yards accounted for.
Yep. Yep. Number three, Aaron Rodgers. As I said earlier, just going on what we're hearing coming out of Green Bay, I would not pick him at three. Not getting along with the coach. The coach wants to change the way he plays football because Aaron Rodgers does not like to play with his back to the offensive line, and they want him to do something else. And we know Aaron Rodgers had a history of Mike McCarthy with changing the play in the huddle, just not even calling the play Mike McCarthy wanted. Aaron Rodgers can take you down. Of course, there were questions about Mike McCarthy's coaching anyway, but Aaron Rodgers, if he doesn't like what you're doing, somebody's going to hear about it.
McCarthy doesn't
stay quiet.
McCarthy's offense was very outdated by the end of his tenure with he relied heavily on one-on-one matchups to win most of the time, didn't really scheme to get guys open. And at the end there, when they were having injury problems and whatnot with wideouts, it was it didn't work out.
No.
All they had was – they had Davante Adams, but if you're doubling Davante, then you got to go somewhere else.
So you're saying Mike McCarthy doesn't make adjustments as well as Andy Reid?
No.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying.
Mahomes – Watson, Rodgers, Andrew Luck is 4, Matt Ryan 5, Baker Mayfield 6, Tom Brady down to 21, fantasy football rankings. Running back, Damien Williams comes in at number 9, 1 through 5, 1 through 4. You can pretty much call Barkley, Elliott, McCaffrey, Kamara. Le'Veon Bell 12, Kareem Hunt 56, because he will have some games he will not be playing in. Wide receiver, highest chief is Sammy Watkins at 17. Tyreek Hill is 29, again, anticipating that he may face a suspension. Top tight end, according to Matthew Berry, ESPN.com, fantasy football, Travis Kelce. No more Gronk, it's Kelce. Zach Ertz is 2, George Kittle is 3. You could probably make an argument for any of those three. For me, Kelce's the top tight end in the National Football League, but you could make an argument either way on that.
I mean, with that offense, and as we said before, with a possible suspension with Tyreek Hill, he's going to be targeted most likely quite a bit early on.
One other Chiefs note today, and thanks to B.J. Kissel, who is the reporter, the in-house reporter who works for the Kansas City Chiefs, just tweeted out a video that the Chiefs have posted on their website. It's a sad story, but 36 years ago today is the day Joe Delaney passed away. He was trying to save three children who were drowning and having trouble in a pond in Louisiana and didn't really know how to swim himself, but he ventured out, tried to save. I believe he saved one or two of the kids. I'm going to have to go back and read the story now that BJ's making me think about it. But Joe drowned, and it was a sad story because he just had his rookie breakout season with the Chiefs. He was on his way to being a superstar running back, and he was a very nice man. I met him at Metro North Mall once for an autograph signing. It was him and Gary Spaney, and he was such a nice man. He was big, athletic. And he was super nice to people, and he died trying to help people who were in serious trouble. So if you go to the Chiefs' Twitter account or BJ Kissel's Twitter account, which I believe is at Chiefs Reporter, you can see the video that they've done honoring the late Joe Delaney. So shout out to the Chiefs and B.J. Kissel for doing that. Like I said, gone far too early. I want to thank – go ahead, Chris. Do you have something?
I was just saying my dad used to talk about that rookie season.
We couldn't believe it. Where did
Delaney
this guy come
had,
from?
And in a time, right, because I was in the early 80s,
right,
when the team was – Really bad. It was a very bad period, you know, going from the late 60s, early 70s, and that period from mid 70s through up until Marty Schottenheimer came, basically. It was a very bad
time
for the Chiefs organization.
I was in the Chiefs seats for those
some
games.
Some dark times, I mean, because the Royals were so good throughout that period, and then it kind of shifted, and, you know, when Marty took over and Marty Ball, great defenses and run game and whatnot, and that's kind of what built Arrowhead to what it is today. That's kind of the base that was set forth and to what we see as it being the loudest stadium. That's how it was built off that defense and being loud. And I always think about that I think it was a Monday night game with John Elway.
Yep.
When the refs told, or I don't know if it was a Monday night or if it was Sunday
he
afternoon.
He had to back away from the line of scrimmage like five times. I'm exaggerating a bit. But anyway, yeah, Joe Delaney. That was before all the draft analysis. We didn't know what we were getting in Joe Delaney, who's fantastic. All right, we are just about out of time for the show today. I want to thank all of our guests. Kevin McGuire, NBCSports.com. Great conversation about college football. Nick Garcia, former Sporting KC defender, Kansas City Wizards defender, talked about Sporting. You can hear Sporting in Real Salt Lake, 9 o'clock tonight on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We talked with Scott Phillips from NBCSports.com about college basketball and the NBA. If you missed any of it, you can check out the podcast. Go to 810WHB.com. Good stuff today. Good show today. We'll be back tomorrow from 9 to 11 for the regular show and then 11 to 12 for baseball tonight.
Get you excited for some Royals of baseball. It's going to be awesome.
You've got the 2 o'clock show.
I do. So. It's going to be fun.
All right. Thanks to Chris Bowling for putting the show together. He'll be on at 2 with baseball tonight. My name is Brad Porter. I appreciate you taking time out of your day if you're driving around or hanging out to listen to the show. Thank you very much. This has been Sports Saturday. Enjoy the rest of the day on Sports Radio 810 WHB.